Welcome to The Pindown, your Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys.
And I'm Blake Silverman, writer for Detroit Bad Boys, covering everything from the Pistons to the NBA draft and the Motor City Cruise.
So Blake, it kind of snuck up on us, but I'm pretty sure the draft lottery is on Sunday. Where did that come from? It came quick this offseason.
Yeah. It really has. I think it is a little bit due to not as much excitement with this year's class, which I can understand. Czar, a friend of the program and someone I covered the cruise with, actually tweeted out that, like, wow, the draft lottery's on Sunday and no one's really talking about it. We haven't really seen anything. I threw up a piece on DetroitBadBoys.com, shameless plug, about like who the lottery rep should be this year. Haven't heard any news on that still, but it's fun. It'll be a fun thing that leads us into some more playoff basketball. And I mean, I want to say fingers crossed for the Pistons, but I know some people are like, is this even the year you want to win it? So at least it's a lot less high stakes than what it felt like last year.
Yeah. Yep. That's all true. I would say quickly that any year you're in it, you want to win it.
Yeah.
I don't think there's two ways about that.
I don't care about the salary stuff if you like land at one. Oh, no. So.
No, not at all. And number one is still a reasonable salary at this point. Like, everybody is still going to be cost controlled, and that matters quite a bit. Before we get into talking anything more draft, because we do have a couple of fun topics here, I think, before we get into questions. But just really quickly, reminder again for everybody, if you want to hear your voice on the Pindown during the week, go ahead and give us a call at 313-355-2717. Leave a voicemail. All right. Try to keep that voicemail message under 45 seconds. We're going to get to download it, and we will actually play that voicemail here on the podcast. So that's going to kind of be like an old-fashioned call-in radio show. Should be a lot of fun. So again, number 313-355-2717. Try to keep it short, 45 seconds or less, and get your voice on the pod. I mean, we want to hear from you guys.
Yeah, 100%. It's cool. Again, shout out to US for a great idea. And yeah, it gives everyone a chance to get on the show. I know we're taking comments in through the comment section at DBB over at on Twitter. Hopefully we don't, but I'm sure sometimes like we do lose a bit of the context of your question in translation. So this helps with that too. And overall, exciting. So yeah, be sure to take advantage of it when you can.
And the one thing I want to make sure everyone knows is that this is not a number you can call during the show. Like, we will not see it. It will not get onto the show if you call us live. We don't have a way to get your voice on the podcast live, but leave us the voicemail message and we'll play it. For some reason, the platform we use, it doesn't allow that kind of integration. Unfortunately, it would be cool, but we don't have the option. So we've already got a question here about Nikola Topic. And that's kind of fun because the question I wanted to ask you to open up this podcast was to just talk about one guy that you think really isn't getting discussed much for the Pistons that maybe should be getting discussed more for the Pistons. Who's that one guy for you?
Yeah, I think there's a couple in like that top five range, and it's mainly because of fit. Like, Topic is definitely one who, I mean, I don't think his fit is great in Detroit next to Cade. Another one that's a little more sort of a similar angle, but Steph Castle from UConn, big guard, great defender. I mean, he's a good player. A lot of people have him ranked like really high in this class. Some even like as high as one, some in the top three. But I'm going to go a little bit down the board in a situation where maybe the Pistons trade back. A guy that I really like is Tyler Smith from G League Ignite. He's like a stretch 4-5 who can really shoot the ball. And one thing that, I mean, I think would immensely benefit the Pistons if they did have a floor spacing big. Those aren't easy to come by. There are conversations whether Smith can play a five at the NBA level. He's big enough to do so. It's more about strength and defensively, but he can really shoot the ball. Another guy I wrote a story about for DBB not too long ago, but there's Kyle Filipowski, who's more of that traditional center that can shoot the ball. But Smith's another guy that I really like, and I feel like he just hasn't got a ton of buzz, at least lately, in the draft class.
Do you think Smith's like draft ceiling is up into the top five, or is that more of like a trade back candidate? I mean, obviously, with a lot of these guys, probably in that 7 to 15 or so range, I mean, there's huge variance for where they're going to land. This draft is pretty even after you get out of maybe the top one or top two. So all it would take is someone to fall in love with Tyler Smith. But do you think that might happen top five or maybe a little further back?
Yeah, I think top five and maybe even top 10 is a little rich for me. So I'm thinking about it more in like a trade back lens, which I mean, may happen, may not happen. There are some guys, like you said, Wes, all it really takes is one team to fall in love with someone and there not to be a trade on the table for someone to jump up the board. Like Mr. Jones in the chat brings up Deron Holmes the second, which is another guy who fits a similar profile to Smith, an even better defender, and he's going to be a first round pick. That's another guy I like for the Pistons, but just not in the top five guaranteed range that they're in right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to look through like the back of my big board at the moment to see if there's anybody that, like, you know, could maybe make an argument for the very back end of the top five if you really fell in love. I mean,
Jared McCain.
You said Filipowski. McCain, I don't know, but maybe Collier, maybe him out of USC, if you totally buy into the athleticism. And I'm thinking for like stretch names now. And these aren't my answers to the who we should be talking about more. But Dillingham, maybe? I don't know. I've seen some buzz for him.
A lot of people have Dillingham like up there. I mean, if you're going to draft Rob Dillingham, you have to know that you're not doing it for him to play defense. Like, he's going to be a scorer, ideally, probably off the bench. Not to say he couldn't be like a primary or secondary scorer one day, but I think the Pistons need to draft someone that at least has some defensive upside or a little bit of defensive skill already in their bag. Mr. Jones brings up Devin Carter, another good name in this conversation. But yeah, Dillingham, I like what he does. It's just like the defense is not there, so you have to, what he brings on offense offset potentially being a liability on the defensive end.
Yeah, full disclosure, I've got Carter ahead of Dillingham. I'm not Rob Dillingham's biggest fan. So, all right, I'll give my answer here. The one guy I think people maybe should be talking about more is who Mr. Jones brought up here, and that's Nikola Topic. Nikola Topic is right. For me, he's right on that line between, yeah, the fit is difficult and also just plainly being too good to pass up. You could make a pretty compelling argument that Topic should be the best player in the draft class. Like, you could make an argument that he should go over Alex Saar. I wouldn't. I would still have Saar ahead of him, but I've seen others do it, and it makes a lot of sense. Topic is the best pick and roll ball handler in this draft class. His footwork is incredible. There's no wasted movement with him at all. And when you pair that with his ball handling ability, he's a guy that can make a pass out of any dribble move at any time and from any place on the court when he's driving to the rim. So he's incredibly dangerous as a playmaker. Him and Reed Shepard are probably the best processors, quote unquote, in this draft. The question's the 3-point shot. I don't think it's necessarily as bad as some of these other guys that have that same question. But the real challenging thing with Topic is that he guarantees you trade Jaden Ivey. Because not only is Topic starting next to Cade Cunningham if you draft him, he's also your primary backup point guard. There's no more minutes for Jaden Ivey. Are you willing to commit to that? I don't know. So he's right on that line. I keep going back and forth on it. But I think he should get a little bit more attention.
Yeah, and he's just like a super big guard who, I mean, the things he does with the ball in his hands, like his vision, the plays he makes are second to none. He made like an upgrade overseas playing in against better competition for a better team. He fought through some injuries. He's back playing now. I think he still has some games. He played this week, and Wes, I actually texted you because he went 2 for 3 from three, and I was like, ooh, like that's a little exciting. I mean, not crazy volume or anything like that, but the big, I mean, I don't really have many questions on Topic. Like, I think he's gonna be a very good NBA player. Just the thing is, and when you're exploring his fit with the Pistons, I think it has to be like, is he going to be able to shoot it at the next level? Like you said, I don't think the shot is as big of a concern as it's maybe been made out to be, but still a concern. And it's like you said, the fit isn't clean. So if you are going to draft Topic at 1, 2, 3, whatever it is, like you have to figure out like what the surrounding cast looks like. And Jaden Ivey is probably the odd man out, like you said.
Well, and I think the thing is that when you look at it in a vacuum, it would work. It would make a lot of sense if you're basically starting from scratch with only Cade Cunningham. Adding a guy like Nikola Topic, he, by definition, is someone that makes Cade Cunningham better because he can take pressure off, he can run the offense, and he can get Cade Cunningham open shots, which no one else on this roster can. Like, you're allowed to have more than one ball handler who can create for others. And Topic just so happens to be the level of ball handler and playmaker that not only can he create for others, but he can create for others at a very, very high level probably right away. So if you can, like, erase everything else from the roster and just add Topic to Cade, you could build it out from there and it would make a lot of sense. You just add a lot of play finishers. You'd need a good defending five because Topic and Cade aren't great defenders. But if you have three guys that are basically 3-and-D play finishers, it's a good roster, a good starting five with those two guys as your focal point. The Pistons are just really far away from that right now, and it would be an entire organizational reset if they were going to go that route, which is just tough to predict when they don't have a head of basketball operations.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I have a little more question on Topic's fit with Cade. Like, YouTube user is kind of alluding to it here. Like, they're two big guards. Topic is going to be an offensive hub. Like, are you okay with Cade playing off the ball a little more? Because I think Topic is going to be like your primary initiator, and also, like Mr. Jones said it in the chat as well, like the shot was the biggest thing for me with him for a long time. There was a period where we didn't really get to see him play, but he has never really shown a lack of confidence while shooting. The motion looks good. He doesn't really like second guess things, and it, like, sometimes the ball just goes in and out for him, which it, like, there are signs there that he can be a good shooter. I just, like, the tough thing for me with Topic is like, are, like, he's a very good player, but is that the player that you're gonna take to maximize Cade Cunningham, which might be, like, I could see a front office, even if Topic is higher on their board, maybe looking another way because you already have Cade like as your guy in place.
I think the big swing skill for him specifically is going to be how he can score at the NBA level and if he can figure out NBA length and athleticism, because it has caught up to him a couple times here already as he elevated into this higher league over in Serbia, where, you know, he makes a great move, he gets by his guy, and then just kind of gets shocked by someone coming out of nowhere and swatting the shot away. It's not all the time, and he seems like he is figuring it out there. But his footwork and handle are so good where if he does figure out the timing, you do have someone that could very reliably get to the rim and is a threat as a driver. And that could be huge for him to be able to create for himself and others without a pick, which he would need right now. Like, if you look at Cade, Cade can go get a bucket, and he can then, because of that, he can go set something up for someone else without having a screen in front of him. So that's something that's developed here over this past season that was really a positive for Cade. Topic is a guy that could theoretically do the same thing if he figures out the timing. And that's kind of tough to bank on. I mean, it's similar in a way to like a young Ricky Rubio, where he's got all the tools. It's just if he can figure it out. Rubio obviously never did and was never much of a scorer. So that's kind of something that I think the next decision maker is going to need to weigh with Topic as well. Like, it could work, and it could really work if Topic also becomes a guy who can score maybe 20 a night. I don't think he's going to be that guy right away, though. It might take a bit.
Yeah, and Mr. Jones said this as well. Like, he is showing, like, his feel that he's showing at his age. Like, he's one of the youngest prospects. I think he's still going to be 18 on draft night. So, I mean, a guy like that is hard to pass up on. I mean, I think this year more than any, you can, I guess, just feel good about making a pick for fit as opposed to maybe like best player available. But I was thinking, like, what happens if the Pistons are at 3 or even 2 and like Sar's off the board, or 3 and Sar and Risa Shea are off the board? Not even saying like Risa Shea should be in the same conversation as them, but does what Topic can be outweigh a better fit than, I mean, maybe someone like, if you wanted to take like Dalton Connect at 5 and Topic is still there, like, I feel like I would take Topic.
Yeah, I probably would too. And I do just want to keep pushing back on this idea that he and Cade couldn't fit together just because they're ball dominant guards. Like, we've seen it work already. Like, look at the Cavs, I guess, for a current example, a team that's still in the playoffs. Garland and Mitchell are both ball dominant guards. Of course, they also can shoot and space the floor. So there's that. I guess on the counter of it, they're also small, and Cade and Topic would be both very big. I think they're both 6'6 or 6'7, somewhere in that range. The idea that you could have an action going on one side and a guard almost as capable of taking that ball and creating something for himself or someone else on already a created advantage, almost at the same level again as the guy on the first side, which would probably be Cade. That's incredible. That would be unbelievable. You just need to structure the roster in that way. And the Pistons don't have it right now. So do you do it? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you got to talk about it. Maybe you trade back. I mean, Topic gets mocked to the Spurs so much, and like, yeah, that just makes all the sense in the world. So like, what happens if the Spurs land at 5, the Pistons are at 2 or 3, the Spurs want to move up for Topic? Like, that probably makes more sense. So I don't know, like, things have to work perfectly, and there has to be a market obviously for a trade to happen. But yeah, like, he's as good of a prospect to, like, you have to at least talk about it. You can't disregard him by any means. And I mean, I don't know what his pre-draft process is going to be like, but bring him in for a workout, like, have those conversations and make the call there. I don't love the fit again, but like, he's that good where I could like be okay with it if he's eventually the pick.
Can I give you a hot Spurs take for a second before we get into these questions?
Please.
I think Reed Shepard's a better fit for them than Topic.
Okay. I like it. Why so? Plead your case.
I'll plead my case. All right. He's an incredible shooter. He's almost as good of a processor as Topic is. And he doesn't need the ball as much. So you could still run most of the offense through Wemby. Like, I think Reed Shepard, with all that he does, just kind of running wild off the ball and occasionally initiating some offense and letting Wemby be that hub along with Vassell and maybe a little bit of Keldon Johnson and Sohan, like, that'd be a lot of fun. That would be a lot of fun.
I do have to say, like, pick and rolls with a 6'3" Reed Shepherd and a 7'5" Victor would be pretty funny. Would be pretty hilarious. Like, I mean,
Taco Fall Carson Edwards picture from a summer league back in the day.
Yeah, and like, I mean, the Spurs don't necessarily need a big guard. They just need someone who can control their offense. So I like it. I mean, I definitely have Topic higher than Reed Shepherd, but I see the vision.
And they have already seen the kind of table setter point guard who can't shoot situation with Trey Jones. Hasn't worked out well for him. Wonder if they're a little gun shy. Go get the guy that can shoot 50% from three, which is insane every time I say it. But enough Spurs. This is a Pistons podcast. Let's get into some questions here. This first one is from our guy, Les Jackson, from DBB. He says, if they fall in the lottery, how do you feel about trading back even further, maybe from 4 to 13, for example, and get some future picks in the process?
Yeah. And shout out to you, Laz. Thank you for the question. I added the future context because that's where it was going in the comment section. But I like the idea. I mean, I feel like if you're trading back to like 4, there's more guys where you can take an upside swing, like get someone who fits. But if you're getting back to like 13, I feel like there's a lot of guys who are maybe even older prospects who can help make an impact more immediately. Like Tristan Da Silva from Colorado is another name I was thinking of for our question that we started the show with. But for this, I mean, sometimes it's just baffling to me, like, for how bad the Pistons have been for however long, like how little draft capital that they possess. I know the reasons like why that is the case, but I think if you're in a situation where there's a move on the table, the prize that you're bringing back through moving down is future draft assets, I think you should definitely consider it, because like those help open up other trades in the season, or if you eventually like use the picks, whatever it might be. And I think the middle, like the 10 to 20 range of this draft, like you can go a lot of different ways and there are a lot of interesting players who can help you. So I don't think it's as big of a step down as it might be in other drafts. So I would be all for it personally. It depends like what you do with Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, the rest of the roster and like the young pieces you have. But I think it's a good option if there is a trade on the table, which we don't know if that will be the case.
Yeah, I'm looking through the big board I've got running right now. And gosh, after like 10, 9 or 10, I get really nervous about the players that become available there, or at least would be available in this sort of range. So that makes me a little nervous. And on top of that, I wonder, like you said, we don't know if a trade's going to be on the table. I wonder if you would even trade a future first round pick for like number 4 in this year.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like, I'm trying to put myself on the other side of it. If I was sitting at, you know, 10, all right, where there are some guys that are there that are at least interesting, right? Would I move up to 4 and trade a future pick? I don't think I would. I really don't think I would.
Yeah, there has to be another team in the on the other end of the phone, which I mean, I'm really questioning, like, a top 4 pick will, or a top 3 pick in this scenario will definitely have value, but it's like how much value, like what is the value for that right now? I think, I don't know, like it's definitely valuable, but our team's going to be willing to give up a future first to move up like 5-10 spots? I don't know.
Our guy Bryce brings up the one guy. The one guy, because I do have him, I just had to move him down, but I do have him at 6 to John Salon.
Ooh.
So if he's spicy there at like 10, you know, okay, sure, I'd be happy with that. But I feel like he's going to rise. I can't be the only one. I feel like he's going to rise up ports here in a bit anyway. So maybe he's not even available. I don't know. This is one of those where I like the idea. I question if it's going to be on the table, and I don't want to move down too far. So, you know, 8-4, 8-3, that might be reasonable. But again, is that a trade going to be on the table? I don't know. I'm probably not, if at least I'm the GM for the other team. I think once you start getting into the late teens, where, you know, maybe your guy like McCain or Carter or Bryce brings up Filipowski, that wouldn't be a bad one. The value there is interesting, but it's just a far way to drop now. So I don't know if you'd do it. I don't know. There's a lot to think about on this. I don't have a good answer, I'll be honest.
Yeah, and I will say, for like the other teams and moving up, just because of how wide the debate spans across this class, I feel like teams might be more okay with just like chilling at the spot they're at and being like, okay, like if teams in love with, I'm just going to say like Steph Castle or whatever, and they're at, I don't think he'll drop all the way to 8, but if they're at 6 and they want to like move up to 3 to be sure that they can get him, like I could see that. But I could also see a team saying like, yeah, I don't know if he's going to go at that point, and just like waiting to see how the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, and a lot of this would really depend on information, because, you know, like we said earlier with Tyler Smith, all it takes is someone falling in love with a guy, right? I mean, most of us have Filipowski down in, I think, the 10s, maybe the teens, but I don't know, if you fall in love with him at 6, do you trade back and kind of play the board, or do you just take him because he's right there anyway and you think you got your guy? Like, I don't know. I could see it being a very surprising draft where so many of these guys are pretty close, even though I do have reservations as we start moving down the board. Like, a lot of these guys could see them being very close, and maybe you just go for your guy, even if the value might be there later on, unless you have intel that he's definitely not getting picked, of course. Otherwise, you know, then it would make sense, but you can never really know that.
Right. And yeah, the last thing I'll say on this is like the team context matters too. Like if it's a team who is, I mean, I doubt anyone is really looking for a like primary, secondary star. I mean, they're looking for them, but I don't know if they're necessarily there in this class. But if you have a team like Filipowski gets mocked to Oklahoma City a lot, like if they see him as their like big off the bench, like I could see a team like that jumping maybe like higher than the draft ranges. And that's just like an example. Like Filipowski is in the draft range of where Oklahoma City is. But if teams are just looking to like round out their rotation and there's like a perfect guy who can be their 6th, 7th, 8th man, like maybe they just go and take that guy.
You know what? You bring up a really good point, because this could go the other direction as well. If teams have a lot of these guys rated similarly, a wide range of guys that could go from like, say, 5 to 15 or 20, the price to move up or down might get low enough where a bunch of teams do it to, like you said, go get their guy, right? Like if you aren't looking for a star level player or future firsts to move back from 8 to 15, right? If it's just a few seconds in a rotation player, I could see a ton of teams maybe doing that, right? And now you have a bunch of movement in the in the mid first round of this draft class. Like I was thinking, you know, no one would really want to move a star player or someone that's a legit starter for them. But if the price drops down enough, you could see a ton of movement. That could be really interesting.
Yeah. And I actually we said that there's not as much excitement around the lottery, but I am really interested to see the full results, but specifically who wins it. Bryce is in the chat when we did our consensus mock over on the basketball bulletin, Portland won the lottery and we all drafted Alex Sarr to them. But like, does that make sense? Like, maybe if Portland wins it, there's more of an Alex Sarr team who wants to move up into that top spot. So I can see it. It's going to be an interesting draft for sure, even though the class isn't as highly touted as others have been.
All right, this next one is from Shags in the DBB comments. Wanted to get to it because it's a really interesting question. So he says, what players on the Pistons roster outside of Cade Cunningham would be in the rotation for the teams that are currently playing in the second round of the playoffs? So what players and what teams? I did a little background on this, so you can go first if you'd like, or I can take it, up to you.
Oh, no, run with it.
All right, so I went through all of the second round teams. You got the Celtics, the Knicks, the Cavs, the Pacers, the Thunder, Nuggets, Timberwolves, Mavericks. So just going down that list with the Celtics, I think only Isaiah Stewart's going to play. I would say he plays over Luke Kornet. And we also happen to know that the Celtics have had interest at least on two occasions of potentially adding Isaiah Stewart. For the Knicks, I do think they would like Ivy. They've got the defensive structure to kind of take on a guard like Ivy. I could see him playing probably over a guy like Miles McBride off the bench for them. But Tibbs runs such a short rotation.
Is Ivy a Tibbs player too?
That's the question. Yeah, like maybe. I don't know. It's possible. I think they would love Isaiah Stewart, but they already have two good centers when they're healthy, so I don't know why they'd want to add him. So really the only guy I could think of was Ivy getting 20 minutes off the bench, and he plays such a short rotation anyway that, like, you know, could you add Fontecchio? Yes. Would he be the ninth man in a rotation of a player, of a coach that plays eight routinely? Yes. Like, I just don't think he'd play. For the Cavs, I do think Fontecchio would get minutes probably over Marcus Morris off the bench. I think that fits pretty nice. They love their shooters and 3-and-D guys. The Pacers have the most. So Stewart, in my opinion, is probably playing over Isaiah Jackson. Fontecchio plays, I don't know where, but they could really use a guy like him. I think they'd like Grimes a lot. They don't really have that kind of super defender at the guard spot. And especially if Grimes can start hitting threes again, he's a really easy fit. I could see them liking Asar Thompson. I don't know if that one's for sure, but him getting some light minutes behind Pascal Siakam, that could be fun. I could see them going there. So three for sure, Stewart, Fontecchio, and Grimes, maybe Asar Thompson. Don't know. Moving on to the West. I think Fontecchio plays over Gordon Hayward for the Thunder. That's about the only one I could find. The Nuggets could really use an Isaiah Stewart. They don't have anyone else that can bang down low off their bench. That would be really helpful for them. So I think they'd really like Isaiah Stewart, but that's it. For the Timberwolves, they don't also really have a backup center. They've had this weird combination of like Leonard Miller and Luka Garza getting low minutes. So I feel like Isaiah Stewart could probably get 10 minutes instead of those guys. Maybe this is a hot take, but Simone Fontecchio might start over Kyle Anderson. I'm not entirely confident in that, but I could see it. I could see it happening for them. So that's the two for them. The Mavericks, Fontecchio off the bench again, probably instead of Josh Green, who's kind of sort of been streaky here on the back half of the season. And maybe Quentin Grimes beats out Dante Exum, maybe, because they've been using him more of an off-guard type role instead of, you know, the pick-and-roll operator. So maybe Grimes beats him out there. But, yeah, that's all the teams. It's a lot of Simone Fontecchio and not a lot else. A little bit of Isaiah Stewart, a little bit of Quentin Grimes. But I was shocked that there's no real easy fits for, like, a Jaden Ivey, right, or an Asar Thompson. I was pretty surprised going through the thought experiment.
Yeah. When I read this question, great question, by the way, Shags, really enjoyed thinking about this one, but Stewart and Fontecchio were the immediate names that jumped out to me, mainly Stewart. Thinking I had the same exact thought as you with Asar and the Pacers. I think they could really use someone like him. if he was on the Pacers in another world, do I know if they would be playing him in playoff minutes this year? I am not sure. I mean, maybe strictly because of defense. And just for the sake of like bringing up a name that you didn't bring up, like, what, like Troy Brown Jr. was a playoff, like on playoff teams not too long ago. Like, is he still getting in any rotations? Maybe not, but like maybe towards the end of some of them. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say no. But, you know, I guess if he finds his jump shot again, you know, he could. It was interesting. So the names that we had were Isaiah Stewart, Simone Fontecchio, Quentin Grimes, maybe Ivy, maybe Asar Thompson. And each of those only had one team that maybe they would fit onto.
No Jalen Duren at all.
No Jalen Duren. Where would you put him? Most of these teams are pretty set at center, and the Nuggets need a center, but they need a banger and a defensive guy, which is not Jalen Duren.
Yeah, like maybe backup big on the Wolves, but I don't really know if he like fits their team context necessarily.
The Wolves are very defensive oriented. So given a choice between Stewart and Duren for low minutes at the backup five, like, you think they're picking Duren? I don't.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's tough because like the Mavs have Daniel Gafford now, but like I could see if they needed a backup big, like that's the best fit for Duren to me.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, but they just don't really have.
But they don't need him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So based off of that, we got this follow-up question from Coffee, which is, why are the Pistons this far behind all these second-round playoff teams with their players? Is it because of poor drafting, bad coaching, bad development? What's the reason that there aren't more players on the Pistons that would even find rotation minutes? And again, I only found one instance where maybe you could make an argument that a current Pistons player not named Cade Cunningham starts. And it's a bit of a stretch with the Timberwolves and Fontecchio. I have to admit, it's a stretch. So why are we here?
I mean, I want to cheat and say like a combination of everything, but I won't do that just for the sake of conversation. One thing I've been thinking about a lot recently is just like the drafting. So I guess if I had to pick one here, I would say poor drafting. And it's interesting because like when all these picks happened, like I felt like they were the right picks. I feel like a lot of people did, but now that we have a sample size of all these players playing next to each other, different combinations, like we know it doesn't work. And it's hard because in the draft, especially when your team is in a state like the Pistons, you want to go out and get the best basketball player available. I think you can make an argument that all of those players were at the pick that they were made. Yeah, there's some guys that hit that were drafted after them. But like another thing is like since in the Troy Weaver tenure, he hasn't really maximized like finding guys later on or like second round. And like a lot of these teams have guys that they found in the second round, some undrafted guys that ended up popping and are like contributing to them, like Aaron Wiggins on the Thunder. And I mean, they have Isaiah Joe too, who wasn't drafted to them, but he was still a later draft pick. So I think if there was like a way to, I guess just like maximize the draft assets that you have. I know that there were different trades. They didn't always have second round picks, but all of them are like off the team right now. And I mean, Marcus Sasser, late first round pick, his story is still unfolding. But that's what sticks out to me. Like Bryce brings up too, like they don't fit right now. They might eventually, but is that okay for where the team is after not making much progress at all over the past however many seasons? And it's like, where do you go from now?
Yeah, I agree with most of that. I would say, I think just me personally, and I did play a little bit in college, so this is probably where this opinion is going to come from, just to be totally honest on my biases. But like coaching, development staff, I don't think it matters all that much, to be honest. It's mostly on the player. Guys, if they want to get better, they're going to get better. It's on them to improve their own game, not as much the coach. The coach during the season can put them in impactful, you know, in advantageous positions, which Monty Williams did not do this past year very frequently. So there's that. And that has a role, but not as much on like individual skill development. To me, that's very much on the player themselves. So I just think it's poor drafting. I think it's becoming possible that they've drafted the wrong personalities, the guys that don't have that mindset to improve themselves to the level that they need to. Obviously, they're incredible basketball players already, so they've already improved quite a lot in their career. But I'm saying to become a star one day, to get to that level, they don't seem to have anybody other than Cade Cunningham that is doing that. So I just lean to the poor drafting, and I think the fit is part of it. Like Bryce said, they could fit in the future. They also don't have to all start right now. You know, those four guys, you could split them up in a way that probably makes sense, specifically by sending one of Asar Thompson or Jalen Dern to the bench. But at the end of the day, it's the draft. It's the draft selections. Like, even in hindsight, there were some better ones that could have been made. And of course, hindsight's 20/20, but that's why we are where we are.
Yeah, 100%. That's, we can leave it at that, really. That was the main thing that stuck out to me. And something I've been thinking a lot about recently is just like, man, if we're keeping this pick in the top five, like, they really need to hit it out of the park, hopefully, which is hard to do in this year compared to any.
Yeah, right. Because this year, hitting it out of the park is a guy that's a very good long-term starter. There just really isn't the superstar level upside. Of course, someone could surprise.
Which isn't bad, though. Like,
no, it's not bad. It's not bad at all. Like, it's still a good outcome for a lot of these, for the Pistons specifically, that are just frankly lacking quality starter talent at the moment. It would be a nice win. But okay, let's stick with the draft. This one's from YouTube user. Says, is Ron Holland a valuable pick with Asar Thompson still on the rotation or on the roster?
I think so, but I struggle with his fit. I mean, the thing is, like, I could see Ron Holland being one of the guys from this class who eventually like turns into that second or third star. But if you're still in the top five range and like Ron Holland's on the table, there's definitely going to be some other prospects that are still out there with more shooting upside compared to him. I think the Pistons need to prioritize a guy who can at least shoot, which is hard because it feels like all the prospects towards the top have questions, or when they can shoot is more of like a long-term down the road thing. But I mean, Ron Holland plays good defense. He is super athletic. He gets out into transition. He makes things happen. He's a great slasher. But when you are like a slasher, if you're not going to shoot it, and I think like he might be able to shoot it one day, like I'm not just throwing that out of the table, but if that takes longer to come along, I think it minimizes a bit like what he can do, just because like, if you're slashing and you're not getting respected on the 3-point line, like the defender is like preparing for it a little bit more. So, YouTube user mentions in the comments, he doesn't think Holland and Asar can play together. I'm aligned with that. But like, I also can understand if like Holland is the clear best player on your board and there's no one else, like, I could see going for him, but still, like, I think something needs to happen, especially if you bring in a guy like Ron Holland. You probably need to move off of one of your young assets, and at least one of them, like, of those, I'll put that group as, like, Ivy, Duren, Asar, and like Ron Holland in this case. So yeah, I mean, this team really needs to prioritize shooting, and I'm not sure like Holland is the one for that. And yeah, YouTube user also mentions like there's a 1% chance that both of them get to 35% from three. I think a realistic expectation for Holland is he maybe gets to league average one day from three. But are you okay with that when like that's also your hope for maybe like Jaden Ivey, and you don't think like Asar Thompson is going to get to that either? I think you have to swing for a guy who you think is at least can be one day an above average 3-point shooter and floor spacer.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I also agree that he can't play next to Asar and Ivy. Maybe can play next to Ivy, I guess. That's a stretch for me. I don't think it's either of them, either in a vacuum. I don't think it fits well. He is a better 3-point shooting prospect than Asar Thompson, which isn't saying much, but I guess you have to give him credit there. Here's the question I want to ask you about Ron Holland, and it's not exactly a fair question to him, so I should preface by saying that, but I want to ask it anyway. Can you give a pitch for Ron Holland or an analysis of his game that does not include his athletic ability? Because he is a good athlete, but I guess my question is, what else does he have going for him?
Yeah, I would. I mean, immediately the thought that jumps to my head is like he's shown great skills defensively. I mean, I think some of that lends to athleticism, but I think he can be right. Like a really active both like on and off ball defender. He crashes the glass too, and like because he's so athletic, he can definitely get into transition quickly. Bryce brings up his motor too, like that as well. So, and the thing is, like, because he has looked good defensively, like that's probably going to be his calling card, at least early on in his career. And I've heard like the name, or I guess like idea that you always hear alongside Ron Holland is like Jaylen Brown as the high end of what he could be. So, I mean, if he can develop into, not saying he's going to be Jaylen Brown, but in that archetype, like playing alongside a star, if that's Cade Cunningham or whoever it's going to be, like I can see it working. But yeah, like you bring up, like being a great athlete is probably his signature skill right now. And like, I would say, I mean, Asar's defense was probably his signature skill, but also his like athleticism and playmaking. Yeah. So do you want to bring in someone like that when you just did the same thing last year?
And Bryce brings up defense and motor. Those were the two thoughts that came to my mind as well. Like the questions I have with Ron Holland are more of the intangible stuff. I don't think he's got a great feel. He doesn't time his drives all that well, at least in some of the tape that I've seen, which makes me a little bit nervous. I don't think he's a great playmaker. He's not a Asar, right, where you're thinking maybe you could get a secondary creator out of him. I don't think he can get to that level, even though he is a willing passer. So I don't want to take that away from him. Like he's definitely willing to make those one more passes, and he does kick when he drives to the hoop. He's just not making very advanced reads, and some of the passes aren't great as well. I just can't really think of anything outside of the athleticism that is like totally 100%. I buy into Ron Holland. He's risen, it seems like, on a lot of people's boards recently, and I don't quite understand it. I've still got him at 11, and I think it's a good spot for him. That's where I'd be comfortable taking him. He's just so much of a swing and a miss, or not swing and a miss, a swing for the fences is what he is. And right. If he gets it, then great. You know, he's Jaylen Brown, but you know, what's the floor there? Because a guy I've brought up is Bruce Brown, but Bruce Brown is a much better processor than Ron Holland is. And I honestly probably a bit of a better playmaker ball handler as well, even year one.
Yeah. And YouTube user brings up he was misused by the Ignite. Like he was their
Agreed.
primary.
Agreed.
Yeah. He was like their primary like guy. And we all know we've talked about how the Ignite's roster was just like not set up for success. So it is interesting with all these Ignite guys, like three, four of them in this class, like how do you take that into account when you're evaluating them? So I think that is another thing. And like another slight on Ron Holland is just the turnovers. And sometimes when he's driving, like it looks like he doesn't really know, like he doesn't have much of a plan, which that sort of Jaden Ivey has gotten better in that sense, but like, do you want to put them next to each other? I was watching some Ron Holland this week, and I came across an interview he did where it was after a game where he turned the ball over 11 times, and he was like absolutely devastated. So I will say, like, I don't think the team really helped him in that sense. And like, it's definitely something he needs to clean up at the next level. But I think he knows that, and that's going to be a focus area. And when he's not the primary guy, like, hopefully you're not like turning the ball over as much as he did with the Ignite.
Bryce brings up a follow-up question here. He says, worst case in the Pistons fall to number five in the draft, what four guys have to come off the board for you to then feel comfortable taking Ron Holland?
Oh my gosh. This is a tough one because Topic and Sar for sure. And then what I'm struggling, so the three others for me are, it's two of the three between Risa Shea, Reed Shepherd, and Matis. But like if Risa Shea is there, like do you just take him? I feel like you could do that with the other two as well. So that's a tough one for me, which maybe just means like he won't be in play at five for the Pistons if they land there.
Yeah, I was gonna say I have more than four guys. I have more than four guys, but like the guys that would be need to be off the board before it's like I'm comfortable with the idea, even though I think it would be a reach. Obviously, Sar and Topic, like you said, Risa Shea, Reed Shepherd, Dalton Connect.
Well, okay, Bryce says if what if Topic is the one that's still on the board? I think for me, I would it's tough, but I think I would take Topic right now.
I would too. I'm like, yeah, I would definitely take Topic over Holland. Bryce brings up Salon. I would probably take Salon over Holland. Bouzelis, Klingon. That's probably the end of it. Like once you get, I could see an argument over Bouzelis.
I could too, but I think like Bouzelis has more shooting upside, which is like what I think the Pistons should prioritize, and I think a lot of us think, but who knows? Yeah, Bryce, exactly. I'm thinking that there's not
Yeah.
really like a real scenario where if the Pistons are at five, I think they're taking someone else over Ron Holland, but I think he should be in the conversation.
Agreed. No, I do think he needs to make an appearance in the conversation, but I also think guys like
A short
Filipowski,
appearance.
Castle, Klingon, even to an extent, McCain, just to like kick the tires around on it. Like, I think all those names should be discussed. At the end of the day, I don't think they should be picked. And that's the difference.
Well, Dalton Connect is also still on the board in this scenario,
Yeah.
and he can shoot, so.
All right, let's go to this one from Camille. He says, please make the best roster with a draft pick and one affordable free agent. So if you can add two guys, one being a draft pick, one being an affordable free agent, who would they be?
All right, I'm gonna take a liberty and assume that the Pistons win number one, just so I can say like the pick is Alex Sarr. Let's discuss what we do with Jalen Duren down the line. So you're gonna need to go out and get a wing in free agency. Looking at the available lists and the affordable ones, like the name that jumps out to me is Royce O'Neal, but I'm not sure like how affordable he'll be at the end of the day on the market.
Let me throw a center at you. Goga Batadze. I know we've talked about it briefly before on this podcast, but he is a very good defensive five. There's a little bit of shooting in there somewhere, probably not at or above league average, but enough where you're probably okay taking him at, you know, taking one or two attempts a night. Najee Marshall is the easy one. That was also who I was going to bring up. But I don't know. What do you think of Batadze as a more underrated name that probably won't cost all that much, but quite honestly could likely start?
Yeah, I like it a lot. I know it's a name that you've been bringing up for a while, and I think he will be somewhat affordable. Like Orlando doesn't, like he couldn't really like play for them. He didn't get many minutes. So, I mean, just go and get a defensive minded big. And if that's the one that you can get, I'd love it. Like, I know there are more high profile names like Claxton, Hartenstein that are going to cost more money, but I think Batadze would be a great fit on this team.
He's also still only 24. I mean, there's still room for him to improve as a player. So let's talk Najee Marshall really quickly, because that's a very copy-paste, easy fit for the Pistons, I think. What do you think of Najee Marshall?
Yeah, I like that one a lot, too. I think it was James Edwards said on his podcast that the Pistons had real interest in him at the trade deadline, too. So, like, I think he makes all the sense in the world. And if you can go ahead and get him, I know New Orleans, they're like, wing room is pretty like full, and I mean Najee Marshall might want to go somewhere else and get more money, a bigger role, whether it's here or not, but I think he definitely makes all the sense for the Pistons, and it plays defense, can shoot it a bit, so why not? I'd be interested to see like how much it would take to get him too.
Yeah, I mean, 3 and D, right? We've been talking 3 and D since before the trade deadline, and that the Pistons don't have them. And now they have two in Fontecchio and Grimes, but you cannot have enough. So Marshall's a guy who plays good defense. He shoots the ball well. I think he's probably more of a 4 than a 3 at this point, but maybe he can moonlight a little bit there. Like, not a bad fit at all with Asar Thompson off the bench if you're going to move him there. I think that would make a lot of sense, having a backup front court of Thompson, Marshall, and Stewart. That would be really nice. That would be a lot of fun. I like that a lot.
Yeah. And the last thing I have on Marshall, I know we've talked on the show in like recent weeks about potentially trading for Herb Jones or Trey Murphy. Like, I don't think those guys are really like gettable. I think if there is one, it is Najee Marshall. So, and he's like a great fit too. I don't think he's, I mean, yeah, Herb Jones and Trey Murphy are probably better, but like, I don't think he's a consolation prize or anything.
Yeah, agreed. Let's try and do one more. This is from our guy Coffee. Another interesting question. This is 2 for 2, Coffee. Good work. Good work this week. He says, since the All-Star break, the NBA changed how they want to interpret physical play and are now allowing more physical defense to be played. So how much should this influence how players and prospects are rated and valued for the Pistons this offseason?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I mean, defense has always been like, it's a way to get on the floor for young guys. And I mean, draft picks who can stay afloat on that end, but everything else are coming along, like they're still going to find minutes. So I think that it's only helping that and increasing that. And I mean, there's always going to be specific guys like your Rob Dillinghams in the world who you're not drafting to go and play defense, or Dalton Connect, whoever you want to make it be. But some of these prospects that are, their calling card is on the defensive side of the ball, like, I think it only helps them. Like, one specific name in the draft this year I'll bring up is is Ryan Dunn, who's a great defender but doesn't give you much on offense. Like, I think it helps him. Like, he's so good on the defensive end. Like, I've heard a ton of people say probably the best defender in the draft, but how high do you take him when you know he's not bringing much on offense? I think, like, the differences in the game that we've seen over recent months, it helps a guy like that, like, carve a role for themselves in the league.
The only thing I would caution on with this idea, which I like, I like how the NBA started officiating down the stretch of the season and into the playoffs. I prefer that style of basketball. I think allowing guys to play defense is a wonderful idea. The only thing I would caution is that this can flip back very quickly, and we don't have a lot of, maybe not, how do I want to say it? There's just not a lot to go on to think that this will continue. The NBA was sending a message after the All-Star break, and you can argue what that message was about, but it's possible that that message was about the All-Star game. So this could flip back very, very quickly next season and move even either back to or even beyond to where we were with the exceptionally offense-dominated league. Plus, that sells, offense and scoring sells. So I think it's fair to wonder how long this will stick around. All I'm saying is, let's just all enjoy it while it's here. I'm not banking on it sticking around for too much longer. I'm not sure if it really should influence how guys are added to this team. Plus, they just won 14 games and had a terrible defense. So, like, yeah, they need to add defense anyway for the Pistons specifically. So let's just enjoy it. Let's enjoy having guys playing physical defense, sending some messages out there on the court, especially here in the playoffs. It's been a lot of fun. I just don't know if it's going to stick too much longer.
Oh, man. Boo.
I know.
I hope it does.
I do, too. It would be more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, if it is for the long haul, like, I think it helps more of those, like, defensive minded young players, young prospects. So we'll see. And yeah, coffee brings up Stew in the chat. Like, it definitely helps Beef Stew as well.
Stewart and Asar are going to have a lot of fun pushing some guys around next season early on, as long as it continues to be officiated this way.
I will ask, can Asar still get, like, tackled at the end and it be a no call?
You know what? Yes. Let it happen.
Oh,
I'm still more upset about the rebound that they gave up after that free throw. That we don't need to relitigate it. It's fine. Let's just do this really quickly from KCP for three, and it's through. And I want to spin this into a lottery prediction as well. So he asks, where are we at on the prospects this week? He says he's all in on Ron Holland. And that would be an interesting fit next to Cade and Asar, which we've talked about. So here's what I want to ask you and kind of spin the question. Where do you think the Pistons are going to select? Make your draft lottery prediction now. Call your shot. And then at that spot, who would you most want to see picked?
I am going to spin this into my narrative because I was thinking a bit this week. I am not sure. There's a lot of, like, guys I like that are going to be draftable no matter where the Pistons land. But I think, like, Alex Sarr just makes the most sense. Like, you know, he's going to address a need for this team on day one, which is playing defense from the five spot, protecting the rim. And I'm almost like if you are in the 2 through 5 range and Sarr is off the board, no matter who you're leaning towards, you're gonna have to take some sort of a swing and hope that someone can develop a skill, which, like, I don't know if the Pistons are really in a spot where they want to do that. They might have an appetite to do that. They might like the player enough, but I think even if you do, you have to at least move off of one of your young pieces, because, like, a lot of people have been saying, you have a lot of developmental projects already. Like, is one more in there, like, too much? It probably is. So to me, like, Sarr is the most surefire thing to impact this team next year. So just because of that, I'm going to say they win the lottery. They get one. They take Alex Starr. That's not even close to the most likely outcome. But as a lot of people have said, too, in a weaker draft class, this is probably the one lottery that the Pistons are going to win. So maybe it does happen.
All right. Well, you know, they could. There's a world where they get number two and still get to pick Starr. If that potentially the Spurs are number one, right? There is or still a Portland, little bit. Or Portland, maybe. Or Portland. Though, I think Topic is probably the guy that you would potentially see jump Sar.
Yeah, you're right.
Would Portland take Reese Shea number one? Maybe. I like the fit there. I don't know if they would actually do it. But, all right, I'm going to be different. I'm going to say they get number two. Just, you know, to continue being somewhat optimistic, but not go all the way that they win the lottery. And, you know, just for fun, since we've talked about it already so much this episode and we opened up the show with it, Nikola Topic. They're going to pick Nikola Topic at two because the new guy, he's going to come in and he's going to say, you know what? I just want a full reset. And he's moving everybody not named Cade and maybe Asar. And the Topic move, the draft pick, that's the first domino to fall. Let's have a fun offseason, you know? Let's make it interesting.
I love Topic, but I think if he was the pick, I think it would cause more
over hysteria. Reese Shea, yeah.
Yeah.
It would be something. Twitter would burn.
And I don't even know, is Reese Shea, like, are you still sure about him as, like, let's say the best of the wing group?
I am. I think there's a little too much overthinking going on with Reese Shea right now. Like, what if instead of the three really hot stretches and two really cold stretches he had, he just alternated every game? One game he was hot, the next game he was cold. And then at the end of the season, still shot just about 40% from three. I don't think anybody would be questioning him. Like, he's got a solid floor. He's so young, and he's a decent athlete. He seems to have a good feel. Like, there's ceiling there. He could be a very good wing. But at worst, he's a 3-and-D wing, and he's only, what, 18 or 19 years old? Like, I think he's a really safe pick, especially for a team like Detroit that has nobody on the wing that can really do what he does. So I'm still very, very confident in Reese Shea. Are you? Have you moved him down?
No. I mean, the thing for Reese Shea with me is, like, I know he's still a good defender. So whatever is going on with his shot right now, and like you said, it's not. He's still shooting very good over his pre-draft season. So I'm not super concerned. But I don't know. I've just been seeing him steadily getting, like, moved down on different boards. So I was curious where you're at with him. I mean, I think him with, like, Matas Bouzelis is an interesting conversation, but I don't really think, like, I would be more comfortable selecting Reese Shea at, like, one or two than I would be, like, selecting Matas there, which is probably just, like, something. Yeah. I need to get over, because that's not a way that you should draft. But it's an interesting conversation if they're at, like, three or four and both are on the board, like, which way the Pistons or another team would lean if they're looking to bring in a wing.
See, and just quickly before we wrap up the show now, since we're talking about it, the thing that's really confused me with Reese Shea recently is I've actually been impressed with him as he's kind of gone through these shooting slumps that he has. Because he's still been impactful. He's still been a good starting wing for his team there while being 18 years old by contributing as a defender, getting to the rim and still scoring a little bit when he's asked to do so. Like, he wasn't a negative as soon as the shot went away. And I was really impressed with that for an 18-year-old playing in a professional pro A league in France. Like, I don't know why he moved down so much. I left higher on him after the most recent slump that he went through just because of that. Like, how many guys if their shot's not going, they're just a total negative or completely invisible, right? I mean, in this draft class, Cody Williams is kind of that guy. We've seen it from Jaden Ivey this past season, where if his shot's not going, you know, he's kind of invisible out there. Reese Shea's not that guy. At 18, yeah. That's huge.
Yeah, and you bring up, he's like doing it in a professional league, like mm-hmm. staying on the floor, finding ways to like impact his team, which isn't always the case with some of these international players. So it definitely gives you a reason to be optimistic. And yeah. YouTube user brings up like the reason you would consider Matas over Reese Shea is because you think Matas might have a higher ceiling, which I'd be okay with, like if that's the thought process. And I think why I was thinking about it is if Bryce is still in the chat, him and Sam Vecenie on the Game Theory podcast did a mock draft where Sam took Matas for the Pistons when Reese Shea was still on the board. So, I mean, I think it's an interesting conversation, but yeah, Reese Shea isn't like falling considerably for me by any means. I just feel like if you're at number one, I'm much more comfortable with what like Alex Sarr gives you. You know, he yep. addresses a need where Reese Shea might be. Sarr is still a project, but I think Reese Shea is a little bit more of one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we've talked about before. I do think Reese Shea's best served coming off the bench next season, potentially as a, you know, 2-3 instead of just a true wing or a forward. I mean, he could start and it would probably be fine. I'm just thinking, you know, best case for him, probably off the bench. He is still raw. And as far as Bouzelis goes, I would say Bouzelis as a wing, I'm not all that high on the ceiling of. As a big, I like it quite a bit. And we can just leave that as a preview for next week, depending on where the Pistons select in the lottery, Blake.
Yes. Yep. We will have a lot more clear lanes and talking points once we know where the Pistons are selecting. Mm-hmm. If anyone is interested in more Matas Bouzelis conversation, I did just release a piece about him on DetroitBadBoys.com. Another shameless plug. I'm sorry, guys, but I just dove into his film, a bit of his like background, some of the interviews he has done, and took more of like a Pistons lens to it. So feel free to check that out on DBB if you're interested. And again, like Wes brought up at the top of the show, please feel free to call our phone number to ask a question, hear your voice on the show. The number is 313-355-2717. We'll play your question, try to keep it around 45 seconds or so, just so we can get everyone's in. So looking forward to getting some of those in next week. And special thanks to Sean Corp, managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting the show. And shout out to you guys for all the great questions and talking points tonight. We'll catch you next week, whether on your commute or live with us on YouTube. We can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you.